I would like to welcome everyone to the meeting. Hopefully everyone can hear me clearly. Everyone should ensure their mobile telephones are turned off or switched to silent, and the use of mobile devices for recording is not permitted. Members of the public should not speak during the meeting and may be temporarily excluded for discussion of in-committee items. Members of the public and press must refrain from using the instant messaging facility during the meeting, and anyone found to be doing so will be given a warning. Failing to adhere to the guidelines for a second time will result in being removed from the meeting. I would remind members of their obligations under the Councillor's Code of Conduct to declare any financial or significant non-financial interests which they have in any item of business before the committee today. If you have such an interest, please either declare it now or immediately before the item itself, stating the item of business it relates to. Having declared an interest, members should leave the chamber or hang up from the call for the duration of that discussion, of the discussion on that item, and should not take part in the vote. You will then be invited back to join the meeting once the discussion on that item has ended. The proceedings of the meeting will be audio and video recorded, except where Council is considering any exempt matters. The recording equipment is linked to the microphone system on the computer, so please ensure your microphone is switched on before speaking. Members are reminded that they are personally responsible for any comments they make at the meeting. Please ensure if you wish to speak on an item, either in the chamber or via Teams, use the chat facility to indicate your wish to speak, and I will bring members in as listed. And remind members to keep their instant messages to the following letters: Q for a question, C for a comment, P to propose, S to second. Please refrain from making any... Sorry, Terry, can you mute? Please refrain from making any other comments using instant messaging. If you need to leave the meeting early, please indicate via chat facility so that we are aware this is an active decision and does not indicate connectivity problems. Okay, folks, we'll go to item one, which is apologies and chairperson's remarks. I just had one apology from Councillor King. Is anyone else any apologies? Nope. Okay.
Sorry, Chair. I will probably have to leave a wee bit earlier. That's it, but I'll be here for the next while.
No problem, Councillor Finnegan. Thank you.
Chair, I also would have to leave early the meeting. I have another meeting to attend tonight. Apologies for that.
Thanks, Councillor McKevitt. Okay, item two, declarations of conflicts of interest. Wayne?
None, Chair.
Nope. Okay. Item three is the action sheet of the Sustainability and Environment Committee meeting held on 25th of January 2023. Had we any matters arising? Nope. Could I get a proposer and a seconder there for item three, please? Proposed by Councillor Andrews and seconded by Councillor McKevitt. Thank you. Okay, move on to item four. Item four is the revision of Sustainability and Environment Directorate charges for financial year 2023 to 2024. And Andrew, you're taking this one.
Thank you, Chair. Members, this paper seeks your approval to vary the charges for sustainability and environment for various supplies and services, and those supplies and services are outlined in appendixes 1 and 2. Members will recall that whenever the rate setting process was ongoing, that it was agreed to increase charges by 9%, and in essence that's what this paper reflects. Although we have taken the opportunity to just round some of the figures to make the numbers a bit easier, but they are in and around 9%. Some might be slightly above, some slightly below. In relation to some supplies, particularly in relation to the supply of bins, members be aware that we would purchase wheeled bins for onward sale to the public. We've actually reviewed the cost of these, and in most cases, in virtually all cases, we have brought the costs down because the price of bins has been adjusted. Although we have indicated some changes which will hopefully help encourage people to recycle. And if somebody's buying three bins at the one time, there's a bit of a discount offered. So these charges are in line with what was decided with the rate setting process and are aligned with that. So will be built into the revenue budgets for 23-24. The recommendation clearly is to adopt the charges for in appendices 1 and 2 for the financial year 23-24. Happy to take any questions, Chair.
Thanks, Andrew. Have we any questions or comments on item 4? Nope. Okay, we move on to... Oh, sorry, can I get a proposer and a seconder for item 4?
Who proposed, Councillor Kern?
Okay, thank you, Councillor Kern. Can I get a seconder there, please?
I seconded, if that's fine.
It was seconded here in the chamber by Councillor Rouen. Thank you.
That's good. Thank you, Chair. Thanks, Michael.
Okay. We move on to item 5, which is the control of Japanese knotweed on land at Mourne Drive, Warren Point. Kevin, this is you.
Thanks, Chair. So this report is provided in response to a direction from this committee from its March 2022 meeting. And that direction was that officers would investigate the history of the presence of hogweed, Japanese knotweed actually, on lands at Mourne Drive, Warren Point, and how this can be controlled going forward. Chair, the councillors will probably be aware Japanese knotweed is an invasive plant, which, if not controlled, can lead to structural damage to property. The responsibility for its control rests with the landowner. The difficulty, as described within the report, is that it has not been able to establish the owner of part of the land on which the Japanese knotweed is growing, and where the landowner is registered, contact with them has failed to achieve any action to control the plant. In fact, we've had no response from them. The council has also contacted DERA, because DERA have a significant interest in the control of invasive species across Northern Ireland. It was a surprise to us to learn that in this particular case, DERA are advising that they have no statutory controls in terms of insisting or enforcing the control of landowners to take action if Japanese knotweed is found on their land. The council chair doesn't own this land and has no legal responsibility to act in this instance to control this invasive species. But it has done so in the past in the interest of public health, and it has done so recently in this last year during that growing season. In the absence of someone to take control of this, Chair, officers recommend to the council that in the interest of public health that we would continue to treat this invasive species on this land on an annual basis until we can be sure that it no longer is growing on the land. As part of that recommendation, Chair, we would also recommend that we take the information that we received from DERA and would write out to the landowners adjacent to the site where the Japanese knotweed is growing to make them aware of the current situation, and also advise them of the civil legal remedy that they have themselves to try and address this problem as well. Chair, that's the recommendations.
Okay, thank you very much, Kevin. That item 5 has been proposed by Councillor Tinley, and you have a comment, Councillor Tinley?
Yeah, I have, Chairperson. And Kevin, thank you for that. Hard to believe that 8 years after a similar report was brought to us that we're still dealing with this issue. It was my understanding at the time, Chair, that a 3-year spraying programme would have eradicated the issue. And I'm assuming it's not an issue that is unique to that area of Rossmora, Carmine Park. Could I just ask Kevin, because it's not sure in the report, did we find the owner, but the owner is just choosing not to engage? Is that what the situation is? And could I also just get comment here on that sort of my assertion or my recollection that this thing could have been taken care of by a 3-year programme. So were we misinformed at the time, or was that the prevailing view at the time of officers? Because I'm sure this problem, I guess I'm repeating myself, is not unique to this area, so this issue may arise elsewhere. But I'm happy to propose the report if Kevin can answer that. Thank you.
Chair, in relation to the treatment that was carried out, this was tied in with the project for replacing a failing retaining wall. So the council used the landfill tax, which was available at that stage, for a project to replace a retaining wall that was failing. And at the same time, as part of the same contract, the contractor removed the Japanese knotweed from the ground, and it was buried on site. There was no further treatment carried out after that until last calendar year. So the site was free of it for a period of time, but it has grown back, and that's why the further treatment is required. In terms of the site itself, we've checked on land registry, and we do have the company name of a company that owns part of the site where the Japanese knot is growing, and that's the part of the site which is adjacent to some local private housing. We have tried to contact them through the phone and through letter and through registered letter sent to them, but we've had no response from the company at all. There is a second part of the site which is unregistered, and we have been in contact with Housing Executive because that part of the site abuts Housing Executive land, and we have tried to discuss with the Housing Executive maybe the potential that land could actually be owned by them. There maybe have been a misdrawing of the line of their registry deeds, because if you think back, this site back in the 1970s would have been owned by the old council, the old Warren Point Urban Council at that time, and at local government reorganisation, that land would have been transferred across to the Housing Executive. So we tried to speak to the executive about the potential that maybe perhaps during that transfer of land there was a mistake in the drawing of the line, and that land that is currently unregistered is actually owned by the Housing Executive, but we haven't been able to convince them of that. And they currently do treat their land in terms of giant hogweed and Japanese knotweed, wherever it arises, but they don't stray onto this small strip of land that is beside theirs.
Okay, thank you, Kevin. Councillor McKevitt, you're happy enough to second, and you have a comment.
I do. Thanks very much, Councillor McGuinness. Yeah, Kevin, thanks for that report. And sorry, you answered one of my questions that Jareth asked. I got my answer to it in your response. But I just wanted to know, the Housing Executive land that is adjoining this derelict land, if you liked, is there not weed in it?
No, the Housing Executive are treating that land and have been for a number of years. So when we've been on site, the Japanese knotweed is restricted to this band of land between what the executive accept as theirs and the private houses behind that. And in that piece of land, it's a strip of unregistered land and a strip that we have the name of a company that owns it, but we haven't been able to make contact with them.
Okay. I'm still happy to second that, Chair McGee.
Okay, thanks, Councillor McKevitt. Councillor Rowan.
Thanks, Chairman. I suppose out of a bit of knowledge of this, I think some of what you said, Kevin, there is factual, and some of it maybe not so, parts of it missing. But this was raised when John Farrell was the director, and myself had raised it with him. And the problem at that time was Ardna Cluna, which is the private development you talk about, that there was a family who'd been renting a house in that estate right up beside the perimeter of it, the back drive, which I thought was the Housing Executive land. And they had got the opportunity to purchase their house. But when they done the checks and that there of it, their request for a mortgage was turned down based on the fact that the Japanese knotweed was on the perimeter of it. It wasn't actually within their property, but it was outside of it. I came in and spoke to John Farrell at that particular time, and I think it went as far as John maybe give a comfort letter to the family for them to acquire their mortgage. And at the same time, it was agreed that we as a council would begin a spraying process. And it was the last something that it was supposed to be. If we were told at the time it would take 5 years, and it would take us to go in each year and do that. The other then that you talk about was the retaining wall that needed to be built. was a separate request, and at that time then whatever happened, the 5 years didn't continue. We done it for a year or two and then we stopped for some reason. It's always been an ongoing problem in that area. It affects Ardna Cluna, it affects Mourne Drive, it affects Rosmara Park, and it affects parts of Carmine leading up to the flats. And it's never, nobody's been able to get on top of it at any time. And I also mind myself at a meeting in Downpatrick requesting, because it was very difficult for us as a council or to get the housing executive to take ownership or whoever it may be, that I actually myself requested that we as a council engage with those other relevant organisations and we all sit down together and we come up with some protocol of how to deal with Japanese knotweed, wherever that may be across our district. But again, and I think actually the present chair of the council, Councillor Savage, actually seconded it that night. It's like a lot of things in the council that are made from the floor, nothing ever seems to come of them. But it was a request from this council to do it. And then we end up, we're back again where we are now, a number of years later, still trying to see how we deal with it. And the residents still have to deal with this here. You know, it's always been a huge problem. The amount of it that grows there is serious. And it's even, I know the area particularly well. I grew up there. My mother still lives not far from it. So I'd be there, I see it every day of the week. But I'm still unsure as to what the executive owns, what the private developer owns, you know. And I think if we had something to indicate exactly the ownership of everything by everyone, but I think we need to sit down with the housing executive, we need to sit down with whoever else is relevant to this, and we need to come up with a way of dealing with it. When you talk about the owner of the private development, is that a building contractor we're talking about?
We have a name. I'm assuming it's a building contractor, but I can't be certain because we haven't been able to speak to them directly. I don't know whether they have gone out of business. There's a phone number, we ring it, and it just rings out. We've sent letters through the postal address. They're based in Dungannon, but we're getting no response.
See, the other thing of it too is while the private development, there's a perimeter fence all the way around it, and it's very difficult for people who don't know the area to understand it, but outside of that, it's behind that there's a bank which runs down into housing executive properties, etc. And that's where the problems are. It's not actually within the private development, but they have an impact on the housing executive properties, etc. Now, it may not be our responsibility, but I think morally we have a responsibility because everybody looks to the council to try and solve the issues or at least to engage with the other statutory agencies to try and deal with it. And listen, I'm content with the proposal and the second it was made that we try and treat it, but are we going to be back in 3 years' time to decide whether we keep treating it or is there some way that you can actually... I know we buried it the last time and people were grateful and it cleared the site, but unfortunately, here we are back to square one again and we're still trying to deal with it. We're like John's left, I don't know, when was that? That was the old Nurean Mourne Council. It's 10 years, 12 years we're dealing with this.
John left in 2016, so this work took place in 2015, and my understanding is that the treatment of it at that stage was that it was cut and was buried on the site.
Yeah.
Now, what didn't happen is that treatment didn't happen on an annual basis after that, and that's a failing that we didn't get that done. Now, we started that last year. It's not our responsibility, I would say again. This is not a council responsibility. It's not our land, but... We've undertaken to do that, and if the committee accepts here and the council approves that we continue to do that, then we will continue to do that over the next number of years until it's no longer required. When I speak to our grounds maintenance manager, he would say that, you know, we could be expected to be at this for the next 4 or 5 years in order to get it cut back or die back. And even then, we'll need to continue to monitor it because it can start to grow again. Now, when we treated it this year, he was quite positive in terms of the impact that the herbicide had, but we need to continue to repeat that. Last year, it was done maybe 3 times during that season.
Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Councillor Rowan. Councillor Murphy.
Thanks, Chair. No, this is more a general question. It's just I'm surprised that DERA don't have any legal authority or regulation in place that can manage this issue, given, you know, the impact it has on people applying for mortgages, etc. Are we aware, is there anything in any other jurisdiction where they do have some type of, some way of imposing upon landowners that they should deal with this?
From the response we got from DERA, and I don't want to misquote them, but it appears that this is kind of a, it comes from the European legislation, and there's certain types of invasive species that are placed into a particular category. And if they're, once they're placed into that particular category, DERA then have additional powers in order to enforce. Japanese knotweed has not yet been placed in that category. At some stage in the future, if it is placed in that category, then DERA will have those powers, and they can go then and enforce in terms of landowners who have that type of invasive species on their land. And what they will also say at the moment is, until that happens, this is a civil matter. So strictly speaking, it's for one landowner to take action against his neighbour if his neighbour has got Japanese knotweed on his land and he's failing to take action to control it.
Okay, if everybody's happy enough, item 5 was proposed by Councillor Tinley and seconded by Councillor McKevitt. Okay, we move on to item 6, which is community paint reuse project funding. Sinead, that's you.
Yes, thank you, Chair. This paper's for decision. The purpose of the paper is to seek committee approval to submit an application to the Paint Reuse Capital Grant Scheme for Northern Ireland. The scheme is funded by DERA through the community Repaint and will support councils to purchase capital items, including signage, to prevent usable paint going to waste and to support and promote the collection and reuse of reusable paint. An estimated 50 million litres of the 40 million litres of paint which are sold in the UK each year goes to waste. At Newry Morning Down District Council, residents can currently dispose of leftover paint at 7 of our HRC sites, as listed in the report. We currently collect for recycling recovery approximately 290 tonnes of leftover paint per year at a cost of £250,000. It is anticipated that through the scheme, that at least 50% of the paint disposed at the recycle centres can be reused by individuals, families, community and sporting groups in the local area. This could enable people on low incomes to redecorate their homes at an affordable cost and have local groups and charities refresh shared spaces. Through the scheme, residents may donate leftover paint at a council repaint drop-off point at any of the HRC sites across the district. The paint would be then sorted, labelled and available to collect from the council repaint points at the 7 HRC sites. It's proposed that an application will be submitted to Community Repaint within the allocated time frame for 50% funding, and that would be for shelving to display the paint for reuse in repurposed containers at the 7 HRC sites, cages to collect donated paint prior to sorting at the HRC sites, and associated signage. It's anticipated that the scheme would commence on the 1st of June. And I'd like to bring to members' attention the resource implications. So the total available funding through the scheme for Northern Ireland Councils is £20,000. The application will require 50% match funding, and it's estimated that set-up costs will be approximately £30,800. It is, however, anticipated that at least 50% of the paint currently disposed can be reused, and that would give us a saving of approximately £125,000 in year one of the scheme. The remaining costs would be offset against revenue savings, and as the scheme becomes established, it's anticipated that the savings would increase. So members are asked to approve officers submitting an application to the Paint Reuse Capital Grant Scheme for Northern Ireland, funded by DERA through Community Repaint, to set up a community repaint scheme at HRC sites in the district. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Sinead. Councillor Andrews has proposed and it has been seconded by Councillor Clark. Councillor Andrews, have you a comment?
Thanks very much, Chair. And first of all, I think it's a very good scheme. You know, I know several years ago we had something similar on furniture being, you know, people even in furniture to recycling centres and then for other charity groups and etc. to use them. But I think this is an innovative scheme. I've never heard of it before, and I think will be very beneficial to those who would like to avail of it. So I'm only too happy to propose that we proceed with the recommendations that's outlined in section 3 of the paper. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Andrews. Councillor Clark.
Thanks, Chair, and I'm happy to second the proposal. And it's something that's been I've been approached about a number of times about why can't we use the paint that's in the recycling center. So I welcome the proposal. I think it's a good message too, and it'll resonate with local communities. You know, the message about reducing, you know, and reusing and recycling. And I think there's a very, you know, pragmatic way of the local community seeing, you know, they can make a difference. And we're also then saving money for the council also. You know, it saves the cost for the council having to deal with the waste paint. But it's also a real benefit for local residents, particularly in the current climate everybody's in. You know, painting their home might be the last, you know, issue they'll deal with, you know, and particularly protecting the outside of their homes and stuff like that. If they can get a bit of paint, you know, to protect their fascia boards or windows or whatever, that's all a benefit, you know. So I think it's a, you know, it's a really good scheme for, you know, local communities doing murals and stuff like that. Even tidying up estates, you know, any of them type of projects really benefit from the local community. So happy to second, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Clark. Yeah, we were actually talking at the meeting beforehand. It's actually something we should probably be doing anyway, regardless of funding or not. It's something that the council should be taking on if they're going to save money in the long run. Councillor Tinley.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Listen, it's a wonderful concept, but just wondering where the Sinead could maybe be a wee bit more clear. £30,000 plus setup costs for a few shells and a few cages sounds to be extraordinarily high. And I'm also not sure, do we only recycle and repackage the paint that comes in to our own HRCs, or is it the case that we collect the paint and it goes to a sort of centralised system along with the other councils, participating councils, and then is recycled out? So that wasn't sure. And then, I'm not trying to throw oil in the water here, but council then giving something back or giving something out, they become sort of responsible for it. So I'm assuming this all stacks up legally, do you know? So the next thing you people complaining, they got X, Y, or Z for the councillor, it was the wrong shade of green, or, do you know? So just, I'm probably way down a rabbit hole here, but that's just a thought that's flashed through my head. This obviously stacks up from a legal perspective, sure.
Thanks, Councillor Tinley. Sinead, can you answer that, please?
Yes, sure. Thank you. In terms of the cost, we, as I mentioned in the paper, we have some containers that we're going to repurpose, and the proposal would be to shelve these with metal shelving. And I suppose we're looking at that as a longer term option. There probably could be cheaper options that we could look at, fitting them out with plywood shelving, for example. But this has given us a more longer term option in terms of fitting out the containers themselves. So that's probably the biggest cost. We've estimated £28,000 for fitting out the shelving within the containers. Then the collection points and the containers, which are separate, like caged units that we're looking at, there's an estimated cost of around £200 each for those. And then the signage itself, around £1,400 for the seven sites. In terms of how this would work and the proposals, I mean, obviously this is going to be an initial scheme, and what we're looking at is a proposal, which of course we would review and see how it works, and if there's any learning from year one, we could look at how we could do things differently. Each council would have their own scheme, so we would be looking currently at collecting per site, and rather than transporting it around the sites initially, we would be making it available for use at that site. So depending on where you go and what's available on a given day, you might have a better choice. You know, we can certainly review that and look at maybe having one or two points that there might be a wider selection for people to pick from. But we looked and we discussed the different options when we were putting forward the scheme proposal. So it would only be paint that would be brought to our own recycle centres that would be made available, and not that from other councils. That there's a small process to go through to determine whether paint is going to be usable, and paint does have a shelf life. So that's something that we would be training up our site attendants to have a look at and make that determination. In terms of liability, part of the scheme is there is a disclaimer. So anybody that uses, reuses paint are doing that at their own risk. And we would be keeping a record of how much paint we are collecting and how much paint is being reused. And that would be part of the residents' role, would be to sign that off, and that, the disclaimer would be part of that sign off. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Sinead. Councillor Murphy.
Just a quick comment, because I think Councillor Clark has more or less summed it up. You know, this is definitely a win-win. You know, it's great for both community and people that need it. And, you know, I know it's some match funding involved, but it's a small investment. You know, and, you know, I think doing this and maybe projects similar to it is us heading in the right direction, particularly when it comes to recycling and helping people most in need, you know, so fair play.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Murphy. Councillor Rowan?
Yeah, listen, I agree wholeheartedly with the project. The only thing, at this moment in time, if you were to leave paint back to our sites, you can only leave a certain amount back. Is that changing? Because I do know that that there has an impact on the amount of paint that actually is left to our sites. People are still inclined to lift it in and throw it into their black bin. And I'm sure that's not the way we want it to happen. So I think for this to work, those limits will have to change to allow it to work.
Yeah, Sinead, do you want to take that?
Yes, that's a very good point, Councillor Rowan. And, you know, I think the key to this as well is the publicity that's going to go out around it, and to discourage the paint that's, you know, that could go into the black bin, to encourage that to be brought to the sites. And a lot of that paint, the figures that we had outlined in the report in terms of the 50 million litres, a lot of that could be sitting in somebody's shed or roof space, and sitting there going off, while actually it could be brought back in good time to be reused and reutilised by somebody else. So yes, the PR message around that and the increase to the amounts received will have to be part of that. Yep, thank you.
I do know what people were doing to try and get around the limit that you were allowed to bring. So what they were doing was opening tins up and emptying a number of tins into one. So in reality, the paint that they were going to leave up was no good to anyone. So by increasing the limit, we stop people doing that. Makes the paint that we're actually getting valuable and worthy of using. So.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Rowan. Councillor McKee, I'll let you in quick for a question there.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Yeah, just the thing in my head there, you know, in relation to cost. Will there be additional staff needed to do that? Because surely you couldn't use the same staff, because to me that's going to be a pretty much full-time job. You can imagine paint coming in, and there'll be more paint coming in than ever once you open this up. Because I can imagine, I'm thinking of paint that I would have, you get a paint spill down over the name of the paint. So there, how do you determine what is that actually called? Or if you get paint in with the name covered, do you say, okay, we can't resell that because I don't know exactly what the colour is? Or do you have some sort of a system, some bit of machinery that can tell you what type of a paint it really is? Because that could become a problem mixing with another one, as someone did mention there. I think that was basically, I was just talking about additional staff mainly.
Okay, thanks, Councillor McKee. Sinead?
We're not anticipating that there would be an additional demand in terms of extra staff. So we were basing our figures on the amount that's actually coming in. So, you know, that's something that we can review if we do get a large quantity of paint coming through. But it is anticipated that would be that would be handled by our existing staff. So the idea is that as it comes in, it's put deposited in a space, and then the attendants would deal with it. In relation to identifying the type of paint, what we would do is we would open and check the paint, and then paint the lid, the colour that's inside the tin, so that when people come to collect, they can easily see the colour of the paint that's inside it from what's on the lid. So I hope that answers your question.
Just, you can't get 40 shades of green, you know.
You stay away from the green ones, Harold. Right, thank you. Okay, so thank you. Item 6 was proposed by Councillor Andrews and seconded by Councillor Clark. Okay, so we move on. Items 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 and 14 are deemed to be exempt under paragraph 3 of part 1 of Schedule 6 of the Local Government Act 2014. Information relating to the financial or business affairs of any particular person, including the council holding that information.
Second, please.
Who's that?
Councillor Curran.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Curran. Okay, Colette, can you let me know if there's any press come back? Thanks, Colette. Okay, I'll just read out what was agreed in closed session. Item 7, the economic appraisal for the appointment of a metal fabrication and repair contractor. On a proposal of Councillor Stokes, seconded by Councillor Murphy, it was agreed to note the content of the report and associated economic appraisal and accept the conclusion of the economic appraisal that option 4 be chosen as the preferred option. Option 4 would see the appointment through a tender process of a contractor to provide metal fabrication and repair services. In addition to this, an independent metallurgical and mechanical engineering consultancy service would be appointed to provide advice to council officers on the procurement and management of this service. Item 8, the business cases for maintenance and monitoring of council public space CCTV. On the proposal of Councillor Stokes, seconded by Councillor Andrews, it was agreed to note the content of the report, approve the findings of the business cases presented, business case for town centre CCTV analogue fibre optic lines to link camera system to monitoring centre, approve option 1, continue with analogue line rental with the current provider pending outcome of review of public space CCTV for 12-month period under an STA. Business case for town centre CCTV monitoring. Approve option 1, continue with annual monitoring contract with the current provider for 21 town centre public space CCTV cameras for a 12-month period under an STA. Committee to note that both contracts will be awarded via the use of STA. Item 9, the business case for the appointment of a contractor to undertake Legionella control measures on behalf of the council. On a proposal of Councillor Stokes, seconded by Councillor McGuinness, it was agreed to note the content of the report, accept the conclusion of the business case that option 3 be chosen as the preferred option. Option 3 would see the appointment through a tender process of a competent contractor to undertake a number of duties under the Council's Legionella Management Plan for a 3-year period. Item 10 is the business case for the appointment of a contractor to undertake asbestos control measures on behalf of the Council. On the proposal of Councillor Stokes, seconded by Councillor McKevitt, it was agreed to note the content of the report, accept the conclusion of the business case that option 3 be chosen as the preferred option to the appointment through a tender process of a competent contractor to undertake a number of duties under the Council's Asbestos Management Plan for a 3-year period. Item 11, waste contract extensions. On the proposal of Councillor Stokes, seconded by Councillor McKevitt, it was agreed to approve the extension of waste collection and processing contracts listed in Appendix 1 in line with the extension and end date in the table, the extension of dog holding, kenneling and related service contracts listed in Appendix 2 in line with the extension end date in the table and rate increases in line with CPI. Item 12, Waste Management Fleet Replacement Programme. On the proposal of Councillor Andrews, seconded by Councillor Curran, it was agreed to approve the four-year capital replacement programme for vehicles for the period 2023-27, as outlined in the officer's report. Approve the receipt of annual reports on the fleet replacement programme to committee. Note the approach in relation to the fleet replacement metrics as detailed in the report. Item 13, the ARC Joint Committee Members' Monthly Bulletin, 26th of January 2023. On the proposal of Councillor Stokes, seconded by Councillor Murphy, it was agreed to note the above bulletin. And item 14, the ARC 21 Joint Committee Meeting in committee minutes of Tuesday, the 6th of December 2022. On the proposal of Councillor Stokes, seconded by Councillor Murphy, it was agreed to note the above minutes. Okay, thank you. So, folks, items 15, 16 and 17 are also all for noting, so I'll take a proposer and a seconder for all three. Item 15 was the Northern Ireland Local Authority collected municipal waste management statistics, quarterly provisional estimates for July to September 2022. Item 16 was the ARC 21 Joint Committee meeting minutes of Tuesday the 6th December 2022. And item 17 was the historical action sheet. So that's proposed by Councillor Bowsey. Can I get a seconder for the final three items, please? Noting, and seconded by Councillor Rowan. Okay, folks, that concludes our committee meeting for this month. So thanks everyone for attending, and to those in the chamber, safe home, and all the best, everyone else. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.